Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Jordan is on Best. Harper's on Miller.
They play together, they believe. And Caris LeVert is cold.
LeVert, back in. Speed.
Oh, he's a one-man wrecking crew.
Holiday, shot clock down to six. Finds Warren.
Welcome to another edition of the Indy Cornrows podcast. This is your host, Mark Schindler. As always, before we get started today, if you have not already, please be sure to rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts. We always want to hear from you and get your feedback. And of course, read us over at Indy Cornrows. The season is starting really damn soon, which I'm both ready and not ready for. And to unpack some more things from things that have leaked out during media week, and as well as finally answer your mailbag questions from last week, because I've been busy as hell. Tom Lewis. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Mark. You know, we got single game tickets are on sale. Fan jam on Sunday. It's all falling into place here.
Yeah, it's, having media day on last Monday, really, I guess, was that this Monday? I think that was this Monday. Yeah, it feels like last Monday, but...
A few days ago.
Yeah, you know, time's a flat circle, but the season is really feeling... upon us, and we'll talk more about preseason later, but the first preseason game is in four freaking days against the Knicks on October 5th, which is kind of just absurd. But I'm very ready for that. Pacers have four preseason games before they have their first game against the Hornets on the 20th. We'll of course, dive into those preseason games after they happen and discuss our takeaways and whatnot. Cause it's kind of funny. I don't know if this has changed up for you at all, but I went from just being kind of like, it'll be interesting to see what happens in preseason, but I'm not going to take too much from it. But now, after media day, and we're going to dive into it, but I feel like I am coming away being very much so interested to see what happens during preseason and see how things look rotationally. And I'll ask this to you too. Caitlin and I talked about it a few days ago, but I feel like my biggest takeaways from everything that's come out during training camp is that the rotation looks a lot different than I think I expected it to in some ways, based on the way things are being talked about.
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. It is just was writing a little something about Isaiah Jackson yesterday. And I was like, man, I'm looking forward to these preseason games in the same light. Like, I was looking forward to watching Duarte in Vegas just to see that the new way they're going to be using guys and, who they're going to be mixing and matching and experimenting with. And again, I think the interest for me is that, the math doesn't add up when I think about all the superlatives I've heard and all the different ways guys were talked about being used and, when and how are they going to be used is going to be interesting. And it definitely is going to be a different vibe in a different way of this kind of same team approaching things than it was last year. That's for sure.
Yeah. I completely agree. And also I want to put this out there right now. We're not going to get to every mailbag question because a lot of the mailbag questions are going to be answered in this because a lot of them are about the rotation. I'm planning on writing some this weekend on it as well. But I think one of the bigger takeaways I've had, obviously we'll talk about Isaiah Jackson in a minute, but I really imagine Torrey Craig being more of like the 10th or 11th man on the team based on, what his talent level is and how he's been on other teams. And it really seems like he's going to be the first forward off the bench, which I think was what stood out the most to me. Like, I don't know, maybe I had blinders on, but it felt to me like we just really didn't hear that much about O'Shea Brissett out of training camp or at media day in general. Like I think Rick only mentioned O'Shea once, but he's spoken really highly on Torrey Craig. I'm not sure to, I don't want to take everything away from just you know, a couple of interviews, but also, you know, going off of Rick's podcast with the sideline guys, that was kind of that track there as well. Where are you at with that? Because I found that really interesting, and I'm not entirely sure how I view that right now.
Yeah, I definitely feel like if you're setting a pecking order, at least how they felt going into it, the way they were talking about Craig as being a guy that really, you know, the impetus for signing him was they weren't sure TJ Warren would be available to play, so they wanted to get a guy who could you know, play that kind of 3-4 role. And it definitely sounds like he was going to be the next guy up. Now, I don't know if that means he's going to be starting just because of the, you know, the famous double big situation. Yeah. that creates a lot of flexibility with who they can start. But I certainly think he's going to be in that first reserve unit. It sounds like, you know, and again, this is a beautiful sweet spot here between the day and even this first preseason game, where we have to just overanalyze some sound bites and snippets and comments, which I'm fully deep into. Yeah. There was a couple of great little interviews yesterday with Sabonis and Justin Holiday, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Only because it, in my mind, sounded like major slights at Nate Bjorkman, which I'm sure was not the intent. But hey, that's where we're at right now. That's the beauty of coming to this league and these guys. So, but back to, you know, the point at hand, I tend to agree with you that Craig is in there. And again, this is the math thing. I mean, I don't think they're down on O'Shea percent. I think they feel like he's going to be a guy that they can rely on and use. But again, when it comes to a math equation, when and how is that going to happen? You know, unless let's not have it, you know, there's another rash of injury.
Yeah, exactly. And it's less that I think that they're down on O'Shea, but more it seems like they are higher, just based on everything that's come out, it feels like they are higher on Torrey Craig than O'Shea Brissett coming into the year in some ways, which is definitely not what I expected. And again, like I think that's what I want to see most in preseason. How much are they using O'Shea Brissett? What is that looking like? And I guess, you know, again, it's preseason, so you can't take away too much from it, but something that is definitely worth tracking. And the same thing with Isaiah Jackson. Like Caitlin and I talked about this, so we don't have to hit on it for too much, but you know, they had a complete shift in how they're seeming to look at Isaiah, going from you know, after the draft, stating pretty clearly that they thought he's somebody that they want, that they view as a four long term, who isn't quite there yet, and that they want to see play in Fort Wayne for a while and develop. And then media day hit, and they're like, well, we think he's ready to, you know, we think he's going to contribute for us this year. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was not expecting that. And I mean, I guess part of that could be playing as well as he did in summer league, but also, you know, Chad Buchanan had that one-on-one after something, like, I mean, during summer league or towards the end of it, and was echoing the same stuff as he did on draft night. So where are we at with that? Because it's been the O'Shea, it's been the Isaiah Jackson hype train headed into the year.
It has. I mean, that was the most shocking thing of, as far as, you know, really raising the expectations on that. And, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that something like that happened, and then all of a sudden the guy's not playing, and they're like, well, he's only 19, you know, a month into the season. You're like, well, yeah, but you guys were, you know, talking about him being the best athlete on the team and everything, which he probably is. But one thing that, you know, there were, I can't remember if it was Pritchard or Carlisle, but specifically were saying, like, what you saw at Summer League with him was not, you know, the full go. I mean, and the fact that he had all the red tape with the trade and everything that really didn't allow him to play that much until the last game, and that it's, you know, they made it sound like what they'd seen at the field house over the, you know, the month before training camp was improved offensive game, and then, you know, you have the defensive capability to be kind of a Bam Adebayo type guy. which is just too fun to think about. And also sets us all up for major disappointment if we don't see, you know, some of those flashes this year. But again, you know, back to the math problem, I ended up asking him about Goga Bitadze because there was not a word uttered about him. And I'm thinking, you know, how are they going to have a rotation that has both Jackson and Goga? Because I'm barely getting Goga in there as it is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, yesterday, and here again, we're overanalyzing some. I see a clip with the bigs flaring out shooting threes. It's Goga. It's Domas and Miles Turner. Jackson's not with that group. He's with another group. So, you know, maybe they're seeing him as more power forward and less as a center. And, you know, I'm sure at some point in his career, he'd be a perfect guy to play both. But maybe initially that's not how they're going to utilize him. So, but again, I don't know how they're going to squeeze all these guys in and you know, for impactful roles, unless it's more of a, you know, they're going to be using 11, maybe even 12 guys, but not every night, obviously. You know, you're going to have play it on matchups or play it, you know, depending upon the team that's coming in or the situation or the back-to-back or whatever it might be, where they're also managing minutes a little more than, obviously, you know, like last year with Domas and Malcolm in particular, where they were, you know, playing them those heavy minutes. So, you know, that's the, in trying to figure out, you know, the equation and to get those guys in, those are the types of things you got to think about. But again, that's why it's going to be fun just early in the season to see how it actually rolls out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's very interesting to parse through and try and figure that out. And again, like I just trying to like do the rotations, on paper, like just in an Excel doc or just even just putting the minutes out, you're like, I don't know about this. But yeah, I mean, transitioning away from that, I know you said coming in that you had something interesting, a TJ McConnell anecdote, which I'm very excited to hear from you.
Well, I was listening to just, you know, the kind of interviews yesterday. And again, like I said, we're overanalyzing it. And I heard, you know, Domas and Justin Holliday talking about, you know, the structure and the, you know, the gravitas, if you will, that Rick Carlisle has and the respect they all have for him and the respect the referees are going to have for him and all these things. I'm like, oh, man, there was no respect last year for what was going on. And then, you know, TJ McConnell is now I know. This show was on when I was really young, in the 60s. Leave It to Beaver. Have you ever heard of it? This is a
yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah,
generational. Okay. Have you ever heard of Eddie Haskell?
I think I've heard of it, but I'm not sure. Okay. I've never seen an episode of Leave It to Beaver.
All right. Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. So there's a character on there who's like the older son's friend. Eddie Haskell, and he would come in, you know, and be like, oh, hello, Mrs. Cleaver, how are you? And it'd be really polite and basically full of crap. And then he'd go upstairs and just start, you know, being a jerk and being mean to the younger son and all that. So, you know, there's always a thing where, oh, this guy's an Eddie Haskell because he, you know, gives this perfect facade while he's talking. And then, you know, once the, in this case with TJ, once the mic's off, different guy. So I only say that because of last year where he stuck to the script with Bjorkgren the whole way through, talking about how everybody respected him, how much they appreciated him and all that. And then now, you know, yesterday he was kind of hitting all the same beats and talking about Malcolm and what an unbelievable leader he is and how lucky they are to play with him. And the great job he's done and really promoting that leadership thing. And I'm just like, okay, this is getting to be a little bit much. so now, you know, I appreciate the effort to smooth over everything that TJ goes through. But yeah, I'm gonna have a hard time taking everything you said seriously when it's on the record.
Wow, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of it that way, but that is a good point. He was very
stuff, you know.
Yeah,
and it's smart, you know. And I'm sure, obviously, there's truth to it in his eyes and everything. But I'm like, come on, he's going over the top here again, like he did with Brooklyn. And I love it.
Yeah.
No, that's funny. Eddie Haskell move.
Well, I will have to go up and look up some Leave It to Beaver so that I get a better picture. But yeah, no, I totally see that. He was very staunch in his defense of Nate Bjorkgren last year. And I think part of that comes from being a coach's son, I would imagine. But yeah, no, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it like that. You know, going off that too, in terms of just looking at the way that this team is talking about one another, talking about leadership and whatnot, what did you make out of all of the leadership talk and everything that came out during media day? Because that was something that got hit a lot on Monday.
Yeah, I don't want to say disingenuous. I think the effort is there, and I just feel like, you know, when Malcolm was brought in, I mean, that was one of the reasons he was brought in, not only because of his ability to play, but like he's just a natural leader. I mean, you hear him talk. I mean, the fact that he sounds like Mr. Obama, whatever, but he has a voice, and he's obviously intelligent and you know, seems to keep a steady hand. You know, he doesn't get too high or too low emotionally, and he's that type of guy, as they said, you know, this week. And I feel like they said when he came in, he's kind of a natural leader. Plus, he plays a position, is a leadership position. It's just natural that he would do that. And the thing that just doesn't sit right is that, you know, he is, you know, into his prime now as a player, but still, you know, where was that last year? Where was that 2 years ago? Maybe it seemed like last year at this time we were kind of in the same thing where he's meeting with Bjorkman. It seems like he's going to be the you know, conduit between the team and the coach. And then all of a sudden, you know, whatever happened, it flipped 180. And that isn't necessarily, you know, Malcolm's fault or anything. It was obviously that whole staff had issues, but here we are again, kind of resetting. And then, you know, he's doing these things. And I guess the true sign of the leadership will be when adversity hits. And that goes for this whole team. How are they going to handle adversity? I feel like they're great when things are going well, but there was a ton of adversity last year, obviously. Didn't handle it well. And this year they should have a better foundation, I think, with the experienced coaching staff they have. And, you know, as we talked about that, they're going to have adversity early in the season just by the schedule alone, and how they handle all that and move forward is going to be key. But, you know, it seems like there's a little more pressure on Malcolm this year to deliver in that leadership role. Just because, you know, I feel like it's been kind of talked about that he should be the leader. And then, you know, you hear Pritchard say there were no leaders last year. So that maybe that stung Robin a little bit. And he's like, no, I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to do more. And maybe he's growing in that role, hopefully. And we'll see the fruits of it. But again, we'll have to see how it plays out and see what happens when everybody's role shakes out and who's going to keep guys together. You know, I mean, he's already, you know, if you want potential issues, as Miles said, you know, there's like 520 point scores out there potentially. Who's going to get the ball, win, all that type of stuff. How are you going to keep everybody happy? And if they aren't all together, as Carlisle said, they're going to struggle regardless. So, you know, they're going to need that voice from the players to lead.
Yeah. It's really funny because in like that was the next thing I wanted to hit on with Miles. I just like it again. This is not, none of us have answers here. It's more about like the guessing game and trying to figure out what the hell is going to happen. But like Miles was like, and I don't mean this in a bad way. Like I think he has a right to feel the way that he does, especially considering how much he has sacrificed for the team. But like Miles was pretty adamant about getting more touches and wanting to be more involved in the offense. And, you know, saying he's wanted that for the last couple of years, which, I mean, we've known that, but like, this was like the, I mean, he like came out, that was like, that was like the first or second thing that he said, you know, jumping right into that. He had a really long opening on Monday. But what was your takeaway from that? Because I think the more that I think about things, like the more that I try and look at the way that things are going to shake out, like, I just am not sure how, it's very maddening to look at it and try and figure it out from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Miles, he definitely, you know, kind of had that feel to him that he, like, you know, this year I'm going to be assertive and I want, you know, to get my piece of the pie, essentially. And, you know, he willingly said a few times last year that he was sacrificing for the role he was playing to be the defender. And then, you know, things were running through Domas and you know, he seemed all right with that role for, you know, at least as they were going early. But the other thing is, you know, how well can he produce if he's getting more touches? I feel like, you know, in his mind, he hasn't always had that role, but I feel like he has had opportunities in that role and has definitely been inconsistent, let's say. You know, he's shown, yeah, he can get 25 points in a game and 12 rebounds, and then he's had games where he can get 5 points in a game and fade away and not be as assertive. So, again, he's kind of going into these prime years, so you know, it's not fair to judge the past, you know, whatever, 3 years completely just because he's continuing to develop offensively. But now it seems like he's more confident in his offensive game and wants to show up. But again, if he shows it, he's going to get enough opportunities, I feel, to deliver and you know, if he's delivering, they're going to keep feeding the beast. You know, it's just how it works. And if he's a little inconsistent, if he's not as reliable, then he's not. I mean, that's bottom line, get the ball in the hoop. And, you know, he's got to prove it and not talk about it.
Yeah. Again, like a lot of it's just going to come down to what do we see on court, what's going to be different. And I think that's a good launching off point. Unless you have anything else you wanted to hit on that stuck out, I think we can jump into the mailbag and start answering some of those questions.
Sounds good.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Cool. So first one, I'm going to go through the IC comments first, and then we'll go to some of the ones we got on Twitter. This is already a good one. From Dwayne K., longtime commenter. plus minus, how many days do starters miss this season compared to last? Well, we're already starting off on our way in. No, but in reality, I think I don't want to sound disingenuous, but like in some ways, it feels like I wouldn't be shocked if the starters miss close to the same amount of time this year, considering, I mean, it's an 82 game season now instead of 72. I don't know. Maybe that's not the greatest answer, but like, I just don't have a lot of faith that this team's going to be healthy, which feeds into a lot of what we talked about. Like, I think you and I are both kind of past the point of saying, yeah, we want to see this group fully together healthy, because I mean, the season hasn't even started yet, and we're already pretty aware that we're not going to see this group healthy together this year. It seems unlikely, at least.
Yeah, if you're wagering on it, which you might be able to do here in Indiana, there's no way you would say you're going to see, I don't know, 60 games with all the starters together. I mean, obviously, but T.J. Warren said in 3 weeks he's getting his foot checked out, and then we'll have a better idea probably of when he may be able to round into shape. Stress fracture, easy for me to say, is just a scary three-word phrase that doesn't bring up a lot of confidence that Caris LeVert's going to be available consistently. So hopefully that's not the case as well. And then you got the usual suspects with Malcolm Brogdon. That is just kind of who they are and what we expect, and it would be surprising if hopefully last year there were times where there were several guys out at the same time. Hopefully it's a little more spread out, a little more sporadic, so you can maintain 10 quality guys that you're trusting to go out there and compete with anybody. We've lived through this and know better than to continue to say, well, once they're all healthy in December, things should be ready to roll, because that just doesn't seem to ever happen.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I'm there with you. I guess in all honesty, though, I think I would say, probably less time missed than last year, at least comparatively, because last year was just a nightmare fueled induced state. And also the team is a little bit deeper this year. I imagine that Rick is not going to play a playoff rotation for the first month and a half of the season. So that would be beneficial, because I do think like that really seemed to be, I don't want to directly put that on Nate Bjorken and last year's coaching staff, but I don't want to say it wasn't. When you're playing somebody 39 minutes per game for the first 15 games, I wonder why they're getting injured later on in the season. So appreciate the question, Dwayne. On to the next one from Cowering Hippo, another longtime listener. I'm feeling more down on this team's future than I felt in about 15 years. I really picked the most gloomy ones to answer right away. I don't see any hope from anybody on the roster to suggest this team might have championship upside outside of a teardown. No real future assets. We have a decent floor, I guess. Why should I be looking forward to being a fan over the next 6 to 7 seasons? So I'm going to give an answer right now, and I'm interested to hear what you have to say too. But to me, I understand fan frustration with the team, because even just as somebody covering the team, it started to get frustrating a little bit. But at the same time, I would just say, well, the team maybe doesn't have championship upside. I do think that they have upside to be something more. And I really do think that this is coming to a head one way or another in the next 2 seasons. And ultimately there is going to be a change of direction somehow. Like, they did not hire Rick to be a shitty team, but also if things don't go right, they're going to make changes. And I would assume that, and I'm not trying to call for KP's head, but I'm just saying, like, if things do go wrong this year, next year, like, KP is the guy that it comes down on. pretty clearly. Like, this is, I'm not trying to say that he's on the hot seat, but, you know, as we talked about last offseason, like, there was some stuff there. He talked about himself, which I think was less founded upon and more just he wanted to be open and honest about it, which I appreciate. But, like, if this team doesn't take a step in the right direction, changes are happening, and it's going to probably, I don't know if it's going to be necessarily a full teardown, but, like, this team has talent. I understand not thinking that the team has real future assets. Like, Domantas Sabonis is 25 years old. He's a two-time All-Star. He's on a long-term contract right now that probably undervalues how good he is. I know it's not perfect. Like, there isn't a quote-unquote superstar on the team, but there are a lot of damn good players. And I, again, just as frustrating as this team can be, they are in a much better state than, like, the bottom 10 teams in the league, if you really look at it. And maybe that's an unfair way of looking at it. Like, I think you could say OKC is in a better spot because they're going to have more quote unquote championship upside in time. But, like, again, I think as frustrating as stability can be, when it does break right in one direction, it's going to feel differently. I don't know how you feel on it, Tom, but that's just my two cents on it.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand where the question comes from. But I would say, yeah, you mentioned Sabonis contract. I mean, several players have really good contracts on this team. If you consider that, you know, if you're a Pacers fan, you just focus on them and you focus on who's making the money. And these guys are getting paid $20 million a year. You know, that's a lot. But right now, you know, a $20 million salary slot is like, you know, $10 million was not that long ago. It's a reasonable contract for the level of talent that these guys have. And I felt like one of the, you know, things I kind of took away from Carlisle's comments at the start of his media day time was that, you know, he's back to, like, we have to play at an elite level together. Like, we have to play together. The togetherness has to be elite. And that's true. But they're not a team that can be disjointed at all or have any selfish components, or it's going to go south and there's going to be major changes, right? And I think that is, if there is a need for the major changes, if they can't play, and that, I mean, that is tricky, having to play that, you know, it narrows your ability to succeed when you have to play that well as a team together consistently. You don't have, you know, that superstar, those guys that can carry a team, you know, to a win or two a week on their own. You know, you have a formula that relies on the collective, and that's tough, and it's tough to keep guys going on that. Especially if their roles aren't as big as they may have thought they were, but, you know, all those roles are important nonetheless. So saying that if they can't get it together, you know, in general, they do have options to pivot and make moves and try something different and definitely go in a different direction. And there's no doubt that this is a year that they would do that if things don't go well, whether it's by the trading deadline or by the draft next year. But, you know, they do have the two rookies they brought in seem like they're going to be valuable players. They're going to be on good contracts for a few years as well. And, you know, if Jackson can live up to half the hype we heard earlier this week, then, you know, they may really have a good little future. And also, makes other guys expendable in making a deal in the front court. So I think it, you know, it's hard to say, oh, they're going to trade. You're not just going to trade one guy for a first round pick, or, you know, I don't think they're ever going to really want to blow up to get a lottery pick. You know, I think they'd rather bring in veterans that help play different roles for the future. But again, they have moves to make. They've had moves to make for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah,
know,
exactly. And I think that's what's almost so what comes off is so frustrating. Like, they, right. It feels like they just have a winning hand and sit on it sometimes, or a hand that could be winning and you're not sure. Like, you don't have a full house, but you don't think anybody else is a full house, but you're also waiting because you're like, well, maybe he does have a full house, and it's just, you're waiting to actually put your hand in and like, yes, just, I don't know exactly. I think we're in the same spot. It's just,
yeah, it kind of goes back to that, Bogdanovich and Thad Young here, where those guys came in and they were perfect guys to sell off to a championship contender, but then they played so well and then it was like, and the fans, you know, rallied around the team and they didn't want to break it up. And then, you know, so then they lost that value of trying to build up for the future at that point. And, you know, they've been just kind of building from there in a similar way, bringing guys in and kind of similar guys that, you know, are could be flexible, could be moved. But again, that's the frustration. They just haven't ended up pulling the trigger on anything. And, you know, and obviously if they didn't have the right deals, you don't want them to just sell them off just because they got them. So it goes both ways. But you're right, you know, Pritchard's got to be making the right moves, whether it's staying pat because things are going well or making a timely move when opportunity strikes.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm in total agreement with you. So getting to what question I want to go to next. Okay. From our guy Isaiah at Big Blackenstein on Twitter. Who is the player you most excited to watch and see how they have progressed since last season? This is a good question. I'll let you go first on this one.
Did like a roulette wheel in my head because I could land on a few guys, but I mean I think in some ways Caris LeVert to me, after hearing him talk about how he was thrown into playing last year and honestly was unprepared, even though, you know, he was physically recovered from the surgery he had and all that. But, you know, he was never fit to his liking. He, you know, was kind of thrown in unexpectedly. And, you know, I felt like he had his moments, but, I'm looking forward to seeing him within the system and, you know, with a greater understanding of how to play with all the rest of the teammates and kind of the impact he can make. And see how many games he can play this year. Because, you know, the day before we get his injury news, he was just talking about how much he just wanted to play as many games as possible this year. So I guess that would be my first pick among a few.
Yeah, I think I would have Caris up there as well, because you want to see him in a full year with the Pacers. Gosh, you know, my answer would have been Edmund Sumner about a month ago, which sucks and makes me sad. I just hope for the best for him. I think my answer that I will go with, though, I mean, it is O'Shea for me. I think in some ways, like, obviously they drafted drafted Isaiah and Caris, but like O'Shea is a prospect on this team still. Like, I mean, I think he's 23. He just turned 23 over the summer, and he was incredible on the back end of last year, given what he was asked to do and the role that he played. And I thought he was fantastic in summer league and showed growth there. And again, like that's part of like, that's where it comes into with the Torrey Craig thing for me. Like I like Torrey Craig, but I really would be kind of, unless Torrey Craig has some random breakout in his age 30 season. I would really like to see O'Shea, you know, really get a sizable amount of minutes this year and see what he can do. Cause I think if he is able to build off of some of the things he was doing last year and show, and with the improvements he showed at summer league, like, yeah, I think he is a guy moving forward for sure for the team. And especially just considering the size position he plays, like that's important. Mm-hmm. Like the team needs that kind of guy. But we'll see on that one. I appreciate that. That was a good question.
Yeah, real quick on O'Shea,
oh, yeah, for sure.
If I can, just I agree. Like, I feel like he's a guy, and again, he is young, and I feel like his future is bright as well. But I feel like he is the type of guy who, you know, championship teams have, who play a role, that come in and can kind of do a little bit of everything, get hot at the right time, just, you know, not necessarily, you know, maybe like a PJ Washington type, or the guy who is just always making plays and in the right spot. And, you know, some games he's playing 10 minutes, some games he, you know, may play 20. But he's just a key cog in the full machine. And, you know, I agree. I think his future is really bright in that role. And again, like you said, in Vegas, he really stood out as the pro's pro out there when he played. I mean, he was solid and so good that he didn't have to play the whole time. They're like, yeah, we're good, O'Shea. I agree. I'm looking forward to seeing him get those opportunities when he can.
So I actually have a question for you off that, Ben, because I agree. Like, I think what's so awesome about this team is you there are like 12 or 13 guys you can slot in and say, well, you could play any amount any night. But like, and part of it is on the player themselves to like be able to handle that. But I also think it's really tough. Like, as much as Aaron had a million opportunities and really did struggle to find his footing, especially last year, like, it just was tough to see him get cast in a different role seemingly every other week. Like, he was asked to do something different. And I know, again, like, you're an NBA player, it's your job to adapt and find a way. But also, like, these guys are creatures of habit. They're built on having consistency. And, like, Aaron Holiday has never had a consistent role. And I think that's a little bit of what I'm worried with how many guys there are on this team and trying to figure that out. Because, frankly, Nate Bjorken was not good at finding out who to plug and play whenever. And, honestly, he – you know, we came into the year thinking he was going to be good at doing that. Like, that's what was preached, but it ended up being a lot of, okay, well, I'm going to run my eight guys and maybe somebody else will play 10 minutes tonight. Like, that's how it ended up being. I think Rick will be a lot better with that. But again, it's just like, I'm very interested to see how that plays out. I don't have a great concrete answer on it, but yeah.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, that is a skill for those type of guys. I think of a guy like, you know, like Jared Dudley, you know, he played every role imaginable, but you know, when he got in, he was in there to make an impact with a variety of teams and a variety of roles. And, you know, and O'Shea's too young at this point to get there, but I think as he matured and grew in the league and realize I can play a long time doing this, playing this role because people like have me on the team because I can do this, you know, and you kind of have to get to that point where you realize, okay, I'm not going to be a starter every game. I'm not going to be a star. I'm going to be this, and this is better than nothing or, you know, not playing. And really, you know, can embrace that role, I guess, is a term I'm looking for. But that's not easy, especially for a young guy who's like, doesn't want to, you know, sky's the limit. You want to, you know, your dreams are to be the starter, be an all-star, all that, you know, you're not going to limit yourself at his age. But still, you can't get to those heights unless you are available and come in and are ready to produce and be the pro. So, but yeah, that it's tricky. And it's tough and different guys handle it differently. And that's a challenge with all these guys that, you know, that we're talking about. You know, when your time's up, you got to produce. It's kind of black and white in the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely, man. Well, we're going to take two more questions. One is not to just take one that's for myself, but it's the first one I saw. It's from Thomas Welch, NBA writing related. How are you personally going to try to balance having done such a deep dive into the draft this year with more broad coverage? Rookies are so often on the fringes of an NBA season. You expect to find it hard enough to focus on the guys you liked in the draft. That's a great question. My goal with that this year is I was trying to do all of that on top of school last year, and now I'm not in school. So That saves me like 30 plus hours a week. So I'm anticipating that that will go to draft coverage so I don't have to cram it all in towards the end of the year. But yeah, I mean, I normally watch NBA games. Like if it's not the if it's not Pacers or Cavs games, I watch the other games on tape delay. Tape delay. I watch them in my scouting service in the morning because they're it cuts out all of the commercials. It cuts out all the dead ball. So it condenses everything down to like 40-ish minutes and you can watch it without missing anything. But no, that's a good question. Like even just looking at the Pacers, and this kind of combines another question, like looking at the two guys from Houston, Nate Hinton and Dejan Giroux, like those are two guys who I really liked in the last two drafts. Like I actually think if Nate Hinton's shot really hits, like there's a chance that he could find some rotation time this year. Cause based on how much this team needs rebounding, like there's other than Domas and Goga and Miles, like Nate Hinton's the best rebounder on the team, probably. Like he is that good as a 6'5" guard. Like there are just like little things like that. Like I watched them at Summer League, and a lot of it is, you know, finding a basis. And part of it is because I just, not to like hype myself up, but I'm just weird, and I never stop watching basketball. Like on my birthday, I woke up and I watched like 3 or 4 games, and that was what I wanted to do on my birthday. Like I don't know, I love basketball. I keep up with random shit going on. Like I was watching Shane Larkin play in the Turkish league over the summer. Like there's, you can always just like, I love tracking a guy's progression, and like you see that stuff by constantly keeping up with their games, or you know, asking people about it and trying to see that. So a lot of the college season for me is going to be you know, trying to keep up. At least like there are games that I have circled. Like I want to watch a lot of Patrick Baldwin Jr. this year, cause he's a guy who I really like and I'm writing on right now. And you know, it's about just having constant check-ins and seeing what they're doing. And I don't think you have to watch every single game ever. I think that's a little bit overblown. Like you're asking a little too much out of yourself considering that there's other stuff to do. And also like you can still form opinions without having to have seen every single second of film that exists, but I appreciate the question. And I will be, yes, definitely keeping up with that as the year goes on. Question for us though.
You gotta give me some Rocco Precaution updates throughout the year too.
Yeah. Did I tell you ever about that guy who commented? That was a, I posted that, what was it called? I posted that podcast that I did with my friend Ignacio, mm-hmm. and this guy comments on it, and he's like, "Rocco is gonna pull out of the draft. I'm a mutual friend of his," and it was just like a no face avatar on Twitter. I'm like, "Okay, well, do you have a report? Because I haven't seen this anywhere." And Rocco pulled out of the draft 8 hours later, and he like commented on it again. It was just like, it was wild. It was very crazy to see that. But yeah, and also for a Rocco update, I just watched one of his games. He played his first EuroLeague game with Cibona. His season started up last week, I think, and he looked good. The shot looks a little bit better. His handle is tighter, and he was finishing through contact with regularity. Like he's a guy who's fantastic at finding contact, but like finishing through it has been a rocky start for him, but he looked good. I think he was like 11 or 12 from the field, was really good rotationally on defense, had some really nice passes. Like, yeah, I'm very high on him still, and I think he should be a lottery pick this year.
I need to have the update.
Yeah.
He was Isaiah Jackson before Isaiah Jackson.
I think that he's a better prospect than Isaiah Jackson. I'm sure so there's somebody who will disagree with me on that, but I think he's pretty clear. He's definitely a better prospect than Isaiah in my mind, but moving on to our last question from @not_DB Cooper, which I absolutely love that name. Do you think the Pacers will offer a contract extension to Warren? And if yes, do you think he will accept it? As far as I know, the most they can offer is 70 for 4. And yes, that is correct. I believe it's like just about that number. It's very little above what his contract currently is. And it's really, you know, this is not a question I would have taken earlier, you know, before we knew he was going to miss part of this year. I still would lean more towards saying no. I don't think TJ would even think of accepting that if his agent is good. I don't know who his agent is, but I'd imagine like that should be a non-starter for TJ as far as I'm concerned. So I don't think the Pacers will offer that because they know it's a pretty hefty low ball, but also given the injury concerns, and missing this time, like a lot of it's going to depend on what happens this year. But I would say his stock probably has taken a little bit of a hit in terms of what he's going to make in the offseason. But it's also worth noting, like, a lot of guys have signed already, signed extensions already that would be free agents this offseason. Like, Zach LaVine is the most notable free agent this offseason, and there have been reports that he's potentially going to sign a new deal with the Bulls. They've been talking about it. So he might be off the table. And in some ways, that makes TJ one of, like, the two or three best free agents this summer. This is looking very far ahead, but it is definitely noteworthy because he's on an expiring contract. We know that Kevin Pritchard is never one to shy away from trying to upgrade the roster by trading away expiring contracts and not having to sign somebody to a massive deal. So I know this is a little premature, but where are you at with that? Because it's something that will kind of be on the back burner this year.
Yeah, man, it definitely will stay on the back burner, I feel, unless he can show he can play. I mean, if you miss essentially, you know, a year and a half, that's tough going into a contract year to kind of max out your value with the team. But you know, I feel like the Pacers will try to sign him. I think he would happily come back if the numbers are right. But it's really, I feel like it's really hard to you know, judge that market on him with this foot thing, and you know, the other injuries he's had and the reliability that, you know, is gonna put a dent in his value. So then, you know, it's a matter of if he, you know, isn't getting maxed out anywhere, does he want to try and take less and go somewhere else, maybe to a you know, top contending type team. But then again, you know, those teams that really don't have room for a big salary either. So, yeah, this is a good question, because you've heard his name in, you know, bandied about once in a while in trade rumors over the summer. And they certainly have to have some idea of what, you know, what Warren and his reps are thinking.
Yeah, and not to interject, but I know before Jay Michael left the Indy Star to go to Orlando, he had reported that the Pacers were really prioritizing, I believe it was Jay Michael, or Scott Agnes, and I'm almost positive it was Jay, reported that the Pacers were, you know, of the, like, TJ was an utmost priority for them, and they were working on re-signing him. So just worth interjecting that as well. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no, but that's the thing. It seems like, you know, whenever you hear TJ talk, it's the interest is mutual. He seems to like the organization. I think because he can maintain his low profile, which is interesting. But yeah, the value is so tricky with this stuff. And that's one thing, you know, again, you look at the roster and guys who, you know, at one point a couple of years ago, maybe we thought they were being overpaid, and now they're undervalued, and it changes so quickly. Here, I feel like anything that they're going to have to offer him money that we're going to feel like that might be a little much if he can't play, obviously. And God dang, they're just having those big numbers with guys who are getting injured is such a crapshoot. And it has honestly, you know, kind of thwarted a couple seasons here. Again, this is the challenge that Pritchard has among the many challenges right now is figuring out how to maximize this current group. And if they aren't playing perfectly together, he's got to make some tough decisions. I'm interested in the market for Warren just because of that health issue. I know, you know, that stretch in the bubble was huge. And showed all the promise that he has, and maybe that will continue to push his value up. But I'd be nervous, you know, giving him a big, big contract on a free agent market. And I wonder how many teams would really be willing to cut that check when it comes down to it.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I think 4 for $70 is a clear undershoot for him. And this is, again, it's not a reporter or anything. Not that I think anybody thinks I'm reporting it, but, like, I would be pretty shocked if he got anywhere under 4 for $90. Like, right now, like, the way that I look at it, just given and I think that would probably be about on fair value. You could argue he might get paid more. I don't think he's quite a max player, but, you know, you never know. He's 6'8". He can play defense and he can score from all three levels and shoot well, like on volume. Those guys get paid. So it's definitely worth noting. And most importantly, I just hope that he's able to get back and be healthy for him. Like, yeah, it'd be great for the team, but most importantly, like, it just sucks TJ Warren hasn't gotten to play basketball in like almost a year now. So I'm hoping he can get back and be healthy, but Tom, this has been a great way to kick off October. Somehow it is October 1st today, which is wild to say. I think the leaves finally just started changing around me today or yesterday. It fall is here, which means NBA season is coming pretty damn quickly. The first preseason game is in 4 days for the Pacers. Tom, you have anything you want to get out, Jesus? Anything that you want to mention or plug before we get out of here?
No, I'm just excited as well. You know, the Leafs will soon be looking like the color of a basketball, and that's when it's time to go. And I appreciate the work that you guys are doing at Indy Cornrows, and we'll keep following this team and in various ways. And it's definitely, you know, as things are going, it is a year that is going to be intriguing and fun to follow, and hopefully a positive one at some point. So keep the faith, people.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, Tom, I appreciate you. To everyone listening, thank you so much for listening. I'm really excited for the season to kick off and to bring you guys as much awesome coverage as I can. I know we have been a little bit less active on the pod. I honestly kind of needed a little bit more of a break as the summer has wound down. But I'm really excited to get going with 4 or 5 pods a week, probably more. You know, we'll see how it goes. I always tell myself it's going to be less. It ends up being more, but I'm excited. It's going to be a fun year. Tom, I'll talk to you later. To everyone listening, thank you for listening. Have a good rest of your day.